John Decker, our one White House correspondent. A little bit of a pep in the step for Trump going into Super Tuesday today.
Well, that's right. There is, as it relates to Super Tuesday, I don't think anybody is doubting the fact that Donald Trump is on the march to the Republican Party nomination. He'll pile on the delegate count tonight, expand his lead over Nikki Haley. It's just a matter, when I look at the results, I'm always looking, Jack, to see what percentage of the vote on the Republican side of things is not going for Donald Trump. Last Tuesday, Michigan primary, it was Donald Trump who received about 69% of the vote. 31% of Michigan Republican voters did not vote for Donald Trump. That's problematic for him as he looks to unite the party ahead of the general election in November.
At this rate, because I know in big states like California, it's really loaded for Trump. I know Maine next door, Massachusetts, Vermont, but the big states. At what point, John Decker, could Trump pretty much wrap this thing up?
I don't think it's going to be tonight. The numbers are not there for him to get to that mathematically. But within the next, I would say, 2-3 weeks max, he'll reach the threshold to be the presumptive Republican nominee. And another big question that I think many people have is, how long does Nikki Haley continue on with this process? She remained in the race after getting beaten in her home state. She said she wanted to compete on Super Tuesday. Now the big question is, if she loses badly with all of the states that are voting today, 15 states, 16 contests altogether, does she call it a day, throw in the towel, and then, you know, maybe endorse Donald Trump? Although I think that's very unlikely.
Interesting. And again, you know, every camp, I mean, if you're in the Haley camp, they have a strategy, they have a methodology. It just feels to me, John, that this thing is Trump, Biden, Biden, Trump. Here we go.
Well, that's right. It is a rematch. And I mentioned just a moment ago, I look to see how Donald Trump is faring in these primaries. I'm also looking to see how Joe Biden is faring. You know, he's the incumbent. Yeah. He should be getting 90-95%, given that he's the incumbent. And yet what we saw in Michigan last week is he got 81%. So 19% are not voting for the incumbent president on the Democratic side. He, too, needs to unite his party ahead of a likely rematch in the fall.
And, John, I'm going to let you go on this. Democrats probably not talking about it, but a lot of pressure on the Biden team now to try to come up with some kind of ceasefire in Gaza, especially after Vice President Harris's assertion yesterday. And secondly, State of the Union week. And with all the talk and that special counsel report about nice elderly man, poor memory, I think there's going to be a lot of eyes, even if it's just on social media, on Joe Biden, you know, delivering a pretty lengthy, those are usually better part of an hour, State of the Union addresses. And he has a lot to talk about because we have the ongoing question of funding the government, divisiveness in Washington, couple wars going on, the border, immigration. So he's going to come and probably talk and tout Bidenomics, whatever the term is. You know, the economy is doing better than people think.
Sure.
But that might be his best card to play.
Well, that's right, in terms of the substance, but you also talk about, you know, just the delivery, how everything looks. And I'll be in the House chamber, Jack, looking forward to that. It's always a thrill for me to be in the House chamber. It's my 28th time in the House chamber for the State of the Union address. Never gets old for me, but I'll be looking to see whether, you know, Joe Biden gets through this speech. He had a great speech last year. You may recall he actually mixed it up with Republicans who were interrupting his speech, heckling him, I guess you could call it. So we'll see if we have one of those types of moments that takes place Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, prime time address, probably the largest audience for Joe Biden in the course of the 2024 campaign.
And one of the lines, John, I guarantee he's going to do, he'll stop and look at the members and say, look, I just was at the border. Can the Republicans please get together with Democrats and pass this border bill and not let Donald Trump influence us? I guarantee you he'll throw that in there.
No, oh, I think you're right. I don't think that's a big guess. It's one of the reasons for doing that border trip just a week before the State of the Union address, exactly 1 week, is so we could use a line just like that during his address.
All right. John Decker, on White House correspondent. Thank you.
Thanks, Jack.
Mike Dennehy of Dennehy Belay Group, one of our political analysts and all-stars, agrees, starting with the State of the Union, and we'll go back to Super Tuesday. I think the challenge for the Biden State of the Union, framing this for the election, is this. His independent voters and his own Democrat base. Forget the Trump folks. You're never going to get those, Joe. It's Democrats and independents, and they're looking at their pocketbooks, their wallets. They're looking at two wars, and they're looking at the southern border. So how do you unravel those things and say, you have a better handle on any of that than him. I think that's the challenge he has Thursday night. Would you agree, Michael?
I would agree, Jack. Yeah, and you know, not that we put too much stock in polling these days, but really that CBS poll that came out over the weekend is a disaster for the president. You know, they, especially given that they are comparing the economy versus Trump, they ask these questions: was it better under Trump? And the answer is overwhelmingly yes, and the economy is very poor under Biden. And then you have the issue of, at the border, that has now eclipsed every other issue across the country. And that's what's driving his downward trend. And we all know about the tragedy in Georgia. So Americans want the border secured, and they want the economy to turn around. And that's why Biden is losing.
Well, one of the things he's going to do on the border, you know and I know it, because he said it when he went there to Brownsville last Thursday. He's going to look to the Republicans in the room, say, agree with Democrats and pass this border bill. It's the toughest bill we've ever had. Please, you know, he'll blame Trump and the Republicans for not. Will that work?
No, it won't work. It won't work because, I mean, he can yell until he's blue in the face. But the fact is that illegal immigrants are crossing the border every single day in record numbers. So he can talk about legislation and that the Republicans are to blame, but no one will buy it. They'll just never buy it because it was better under Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So it comes down to
Super Tuesday today. Millions of people headed to the poll from California to Maine to Mass, maybe Vermont. I'm sorry. I just laugh at how inconsequential Maine and Vermont are, and even Mass to a point, politically speaking, nationally. But anyway, when, how soon does Trump wrap this up? If Nikki Haley has a few bright moments tonight, when does he wrap this thing up?
March 19th. Not wow. Until March 19th. Yeah. Yep, there's 865 delegates at stake today. It's about 36% of the total count needed. Total count in general, 36%. Even if he runs the table today, it won't be enough. He needs 1,215 delegates. And even next week, he'll sweep Mississippi next week. He'll win the majority in Georgia and the majority in the state of Washington and Hawaii. But it's still not enough. He'll secure the nomination on March 19th.
There you have it, an answer.
And then the question is, does she stay in until then? My guess at this point is yes.
Okay, then my question, put yourself in Nikki Haley's camp. You've managed, by the way, Mike Dennehy, a couple winning presidential primary campaigns for the late John McCain. Put yourself in the car being the manager of Nikki Haley at this point. You know, you have made it a two-person race. You won D.C. You might get some bright points tonight in states that may not matter as much. But you fell short, but you made it a two-person race. Now what? I mean, in other words, if it is going to be Biden and Trump again, I think Trump will close that door. I may be wrong. She has a future. I think people were already looking at 2028 quietly behind the scenes, whether, believe it or not, it's a Dr. Phil or a DeSantis or a Nikki Haley. But you're in Nikki Haley's car, if you will, or strategy room. What's the game plan when she pulls out? What is the future? How does she kind of manage this?
Well, Jack, as you know, I've been critical that she stayed in this long because she hasn't won a state. And I, frankly, Washington, D.C. is not a state. So it's a lobbyist
community. It's a state of dysfunction.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So that all being said, Super Tuesday is the day that you, if she doesn't pull pull upset wins in some of these states, then she's got to drop. Even if she does have a couple of wins unexpectedly, then it still doesn't make sense to stay in the race for what you just mentioned. She's a young person looking at her future, and it's a bright future. But I can tell you in 2000, Jack, John McCain won lots of states, and he pulled out after losing on Super Tuesday. And I had to laugh when you mentioned other small states that don't much matter, and those are the ones that John McCain won: Massachusetts, Vermont, Rhode Island. But so he dropped out the day after Super Tuesday. Yep. I think it's just the right thing to do.
Interesting, and you know, here we go. And I guess let me just come back a little bit. locally before I let you go is it seems like the governor's race is going to be the next thing this spring, like when the flowers are popping and the blossoms and, you know, the birds are coming back pretty soon here, early spring. We're going to have an early start, more open start to this primary. And it's interesting, yesterday I had Rich Gulla, the president of the SEA and State Employees Association, 11,000 members, saying they've already endorsed Cindy Warmington, the Democrat, and they're going to make an endorsement on the Republican side, apparently, which is something that their members wanted, so they're going to make an endorsement on each. But this Warmington-Craig race, a story that no one's talking about, I'm noticing Cindy Warmington is quietly getting her wins here of endorsements, not that they matter, including maybe the Shaheen camp, where Joyce Craig seems to be focusing more on that, Maggie Haas and John Lynch. So the Democrats seem pretty well split here between those two.
They are, Jack, and it's funny because I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's really coming down almost to a Gene Shaheen versus Maggie Haas race. And wouldn't that be amazing? Yeah. It does seem like the Haas folks are lining up behind Craig and the Shaheen folks are lining up behind Warmington. It's going to be a fascinating race. Warmington's raising much more money than the Craig folks ever expected. And she's doing, she's just almost running circles around Craig. Obviously, the one issue that she has is the opioid issue.
What about
in her background?
What about Mike Thursday? There's a couple of bills coming up on sanctuary cities. Jeb Bradley and the folks were talking about it Friday, and yet we don't hear much on the Democrat. I didn't even know, like Hanover, and there's still some questions here in New Hampshire. So you're going to have some bills related to the immigration crisis right here at home on Thursday, right, in the Senate?
It is. It blows my mind that the Democrats are so tone deaf right now on this issue. Even Joe Biden, who is flailing, is still trying to move the needle on the immigration issue. But the Democrats for governor in New Hampshire are digging their heels in, saying, bring them to New Hampshire. Let's make New Hampshire a sanctuary state. Let's amnesty for everyone. It's kind of crazy, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, Michael, thank you. I appreciate it. Michael Dennehy,
one of our great
political analysts and all-stars. Barry Glennon, who is the director of what I call the Bureau of Securities Regulation, he can tell you what that is, under the Secretary of State's office in our studios talking about this, because we probably all have had some degree of a text or a message on this thing that we hold in our hand, Barry, and welcome.
Good morning,
Great
Jack.
To have you back on.
It's a pleasure.
Where we might take the bait, if you will. Tell me what is pig butchering?
Well, pig butchering is something that's been, it actually has evolved over a period of time, but as you said, it started actually in Asian-type countries, primarily China. It was called Sha Zhu Pan. And what it is, it's a means by which fraudsters get to know you and then over a period of time convince you to part with your money. But imagine, and I think everyone today, anyone who has a cell phone, I think has probably been the subject or the victim of a pig butcher. Mm-hmm. And you'll receive a call or a text on your phone, seemingly, you know, like intended, you know, for you or not for you, excuse me, but more an accidental wrong number. And you'll respond to that. And then back, sorry, this is really wasn't intended for me. And then they'll connect back with you. And it's really over a long period of time.
They're trying to gauge a conversation going.
Yes, absolutely. Developing
like
a relationship.
Open a door, not open. Because typically, Barry, when you get an email or a text and they said, click here, like during the primary, during the presidential primary, I'm not talking about me, but I was swamped with everything from polling outfits to what looked like campaign managers. Hey, Jack, do you want him on tomorrow morning at 8? And I'd have to verify half the time if it was legit, because you don't want to open something and then you got a virus in your phone.
Yeah. It's always possible that a text that you're receiving, you know, may be intended to compromise your phone. But in this case here, they really want to establish the connection with you. So typically it is not something that will, you know, pollute your phone or your computer. They really want to establish a long-term conversation with you, developing trust, you know, which is really the whole key to being able to convince you to part you with
your money.
So
they're looking for vulnerable victims.
Absolutely.
And then during the back and forth, do they say, hey, if you have $1,000, what?
Yeah. They prey on your, I would say, your insecurities. And it's always financial related, because everything comes down to money. They're looking to exploit a weakness. You may have concerns about your finances, maybe trying to make up for market losses. It could be that with seniors, a real concern is a fear of running out of money in retirement. Yeah. So they'll prey on those things and then convince you ultimately to invest money. But there's a whole kind of, you know, fattening process that goes with it. And it's usually to get you to invest in cryptocurrency, ultimately.
Really?
You'll transfer the money.
Why would you go through anyone you don't know when you go on like Coinbase or one of these others and get your own account?
Yep. Well, actually, you could use Coinbase or Venmo, other platforms like that to transfer the money. So they'll convince you to move your money from A to B, you know, using those kind of platforms, and then convince you to move it to a different platform, which is fictitious
fraud.
That's
where they get you.
And that's where your money is gone. That's the fattening process, frankly.
Barry Gwinn, and of course, you have great consumer websites and information up there. We should get that out. What's it just before I forget?
Well, I think the best site to visit right now, it's investsmart.nh.gov. That's the Secretary of State's website.
That's your work, your office, your team.
Yep.
One more time.
It's investsmart.nh.gov.
Easy to remember.
Yes.
Investsmart.nh.gov. Investsmart.nh.gov. Yep. Barry, the other one I've noticed, and you've probably gotten these. I don't know, J-Dog, if you have. But you'll get the phones today. I won't even say what kind I have. But my point is, they do have some degree of spam security or screening that you can put on there to. So a lot of times when I'm just out and about driving and my thing comes up on the dashboard, sometimes it will say a number I don't recognize. And it will say likely spam.
Yes, yes.
So I just hit, you know, end, delete, don't do it.
Yep.
But sometimes when the number, they use a New Hampshire area code. And these are the ones I love. And they'll say they're calling on behalf of some local fire department, which they're not.
Yeah.
Because those fire departments, usually they do it locally and you can go in and talk to the people. Or they say they're representing the Sheriff's Association or something goodwill.
Yes.
And the ones that I love, I get a kick out of, though, you get the voice message if you don't answer the call. And it's usually a guy or a woman. I know you're not supposed to say that today in gender. I'm kidding. It's usually a they.
Yep.
And they'll say something like, they'll almost act like they're stumbling at the beginning.
Yes.
Like talking to someone else. And that's hey, by the way, Barry, it's Joan at so-and-so finance. If you want to call today and refinance this, give us a call.
Yeah.
It almost makes it, they try and make it sound as real as possible so you're going to call.
Yeah.
How did they get you? You're talking to someone, they're telling you to do something at that point?
It's always something like that. They're very, very, very much trained, you know, in the art of deception. And so they have honed, you know, these skills over time as far as what to do, key phrases to use to hook you in. And I think you're right, Jack. They'll be very vague in terms of, you know, what they're looking for, but all they want you to do is call them back. And, you know, the smart individual, you know, such as yourself, you're not going to call them back because you don't know that financial institution or that loan company or whatever it may be.
No, and if it was representing a sheriff's department, you know, Belknap County, Rockingham County, I'm going to call them directly and say, hey, are you trying to raise money for this scholarship? And they'll tell you.
Yeah.
The other one, too, is I don't know if it's not under your department. Maybe it is, because we'll talk about other investment things. But the old you'll get an email and it looks like Amazon or GoDaddy or something saying that your shipment's ready. Click here. We're going to charge your account $387. Click here. And you're like, I didn't order anything.
Yeah. I received one yesterday, as a matter of fact.
What do they want you to do? Click that?
Just to get you. Well, in that case there, it may likely create or cause a virus, you know, on your phone, or they're going to be able to attach
don't open anything on an attachment. And the other one is sometimes they pretend to be a legitimate bank or financial institution.
Yes.
Yeah. But if you study the email, you'll realize it's not like at soandso.org or .com. It's like, you know, a different kind of email.
It is so important that you look at the URL, you know, that uniform address at the top in the browser to make sure that it's from a secure site. If it's not, and also look at the URL address because it very well may have some additional words in there that it's not necessarily Citizens Bank or Bank of America or you know, whatever the institution is. They're not all that terribly clever in that regard. So you got to be careful. I received one actually yesterday from, it was a USPS, U.S. Postal Service text saying that a package that was being delivered to my home yesterday was damaged. and that and to you know click on this for you know for whatever reason.
To track it or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't order anything that you know that way.
And but nor sometimes USPS, people don't know in their house. Maybe they someone did.
Yeah.
And they do it automatically. That's the other thing. You're not don't do anything automatic. The other one is tax season's around the corner.
Yes.
And the ones I haven't heard in a while, but you know, you get a voice message, you get back in, you're grocery shopping. Hi, this is Agent So-and-so from Grid 162 with the Internal Revenue Service. If you don't call us back right away, we have agents on the way to your house.
That's right.
That is the biggest scam on earth.
Big scam.
IRS doesn't work that way. People call back. They're nervous.
Yep.
You know?
And then also, even just with your filing your tax return, I think that the IRS has become you know more aware of and have controls in place, but I had filed my taxes, I think it was 3 years ago now, and somebody hacked into my return.
Oh, what
and,
a pain.
And ultimately now, when I file my taxes, I receive each year a PIN, a unique PIN that I must use when I file my taxes. So that's just one more level
one more
of security.
Layer, one more wall. But again, this pig butchering term, one more time before we go to the top of the hour. The people get a text. Let's role play you and me. I send you a text. Hey, how you been? And you're like, who is this? You respond.
Yeah, who is this? Oh, and then you'll respond back.
Oh, I'm
sorry. With
this I was intended for someone else. Hope you have a good day.
That's right.
So I'm establishing some degree of trust.
That's right. Then me, the lonely individual who hasn't really had a lot of contact with people, maybe isolated, home alone, maybe a senior, maybe, I'll reply,
No worries, thank you.
Here in Concord, New Hampshire. I'm from Manchester, New Hampshire. You sent this in error. Hope you're well. And then that keys them in that, okay, I have somebody on the hook. They're trying to get, they're trying to hook you in.
Because they can then Google Concord, New Hampshire if they're sitting in another country and say, hey, I haven't been to the State House lately.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Where do you live?
Actually, I live right nearby.
Right,
And they'll get, they want to learn more about you over time. And that's really the whole fattening process, frankly, what they call it. Pig butchering. It's fattening the person.
That's why they call it that. Oh, so be wary if they have those innocent mistexts. Barry, before we let you go, investsmartnh.org, right?
That's right, investsmart.nh.gov.
Are there any other investment scams, real estate stuff, something where people, and I want to get going on this one because you're not the right department. I got on a roll the other day on what are squatters' rights in this region because I don't understand how someone can go into someone's home that don't live there and pretend to have tenant rights. But are there any other real estate, investment stock, any other scams you're seeing right now?
Oh, gosh. There are all kinds. I think the probably in the world of securities, which is the area we regulate, it's unlicensed activity. It's people making offerings for various investment opportunities. Those investments are not registered. The person that is promoting it is not registered, which is really the key thing is that before you invest, do some research on the individual before you give them a dime to make sure that whatever is being offered is legitimate. Make sure that the person is properly licensed to do that type of business in New Hampshire. And you'd be surprised the amount of unlicensed activity going on right here in New Hampshire. And there's good reason.
And how do you find out? You just got to call someone to see if someone, if it licensed?
You can call the New Hampshire Bureau of Securities. We're at, our telephone is 603-271-1463. But go to the website.
271-1463. Yeah, 1463. You know what's amazing about this state? You could still call.
Yeah. We do not have
the Attorney General's office. You can call the State House and actually get a person versus like hit nine. Imagine trying that in another state.
Yeah.
Like New York.
I recall I've been with the Secretary of State's office for a while. And I remember when we were putting on our new phone system and Secretary of State Gardner at the time said live person answers every call. No voicemail. No automated.
It's so
attendant.
Refreshing.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone in healthcare yesterday and she was saying on behalf of her doctor's office, they spend half their time chasing things to get paid because they're talking to people in another country who don't even know anything about the company or the client. Yeah, I think sometimes this state, although I have to say, spending a little time in Florida, I was impressed in one county in one place where you could actually call on a property tax bill or something and someone answered. I'm like,
get a live person.
But most states, you're on there for 20 minutes just trying to get an automated press 9, press 1, press 6, press hold with music, and you're like no one.
Yeah, you're in a queue for 25 minutes or anything like that. That really is one of the beauties. I think that's the case with not the case with any state agency for that.
Not
that
to
matter.
Be entrepreneurial, but I tell one bank because I know a lot of times banks do it financial services to save money and they have call centers like in India. You want to make more money with your members, get a local group. So when they call, they actually feel like, oh, they know who I am. All right, Barry, good stuff. InvestSmart.nh. InvestSmart. nh.gov. .gov. Pig butchering. I've heard everything.
Beware.
Nothing to do with the Deerfield Fair. Maria Prue talking about some of the actions they want to do to make behavioral health an important part of one's overall health and wellness. And you think about it, it's so true. If you're not well emotionally and behavioral on anxiety, depression, other things, you probably don't feel well physically. So, Maria, thanks for being with us. Great partner and sponsor. I want to talk about your continued discussion about Anthem's work to expand access to behavioral health services here locally far earlier. And now I'm hearing employers are asking your folks, can we get some of these benefits for our employees?
Yeah, thank you, Jack, for having me. Happy to be here today. And happy to continue this very important dialogue. I think, as you said, we have to reframe our thinking around mental health, and we really do need to think about it as primary care. I think I may have said this to you before, where it seems very obvious to people when you diagnose a chronic condition like cancer early that you have, you know, a brighter chance of success with your treatment over the long term. And I'm not sure people have always thought about mental health that way. But, you know, we should be thinking about that way. And when we diagnose and treat mental health issues early, we have a better chance of helping, you know, both children and adults live a more productive life. And that's really what our employers are asking for. Employers want productive, you know, more present, less absent employee base. And so with that, you know, being able to offer these services, employers to be able to offer these services to their employees, it's very important. And as you said, you know, what we see now, last year, we saw about 44% of employers identifying that they are seeing a rise in their claims due to behavioral health conditions.
Yeah.
This year, Jack, 77% of employers are identifying a growing trend with behavioral health claims in their employee population. That's a huge jump in 1 year, and it reinforces the need to treat mental health as primary care.
Maria Prue with Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. Maria, this is one, I really like this line because the words have meaning. And this is a fundamental game changer, but I want you to tell me why, because I think this is awesome. Treating behavioral health, mental health, as primary care. Almost 70%, according to your folks, of primary care visits are driven by mental health concerns with kids, families, parents. I mean, I see this in our lives, and to finally get the marketplace to realize treating behavioral health as primary care is critical.
Exactly. And I think with 70% of our primary care claims that we see having a BH diagnosis in the claim, to your point, it says it all. I think the good news in seeing the data is that we've seen the primary care physicians really adapt over time and make it a point to have those conversations with their patients when they're in for their annual wellness visits, whether it's children, whether it's adults. We see primary care providers asking those really important questions. And while potentially they cannot treat all of the mental health conditions that they might see in their patients, what it allows them to do is refer their patients to the right mental health specialist as soon as they hear from their patient that there's a problem.
Because, you know, up until now, Maria, we were hearing for years in New Hampshire that families were really left a little choice but to go to an emergency room in a hospital if someone was having a mental health episode. And that's not a place that's equipped to deal with it. They might be able to make sure the person's okay and observe. But if someone can get, even in the home, and I know you want to talk about more providers coming in, to work and talk with someone in a comfortable setting much earlier in the process, we can avoid more stressful things later, correct?
Exactly. I think, you know, the reality of, you know, I think we all learned a lot the pandemic, right? And, you know, one of the things that the pandemic taught us is that, you know, as consumers of healthcare services, we can offer, you know, our members and consumers different modalities of care. And what I mean by that is during COVID, out of necessity, right, we all turned to telehealth, whether it was for a medical condition, a mental health condition. The only way you could see your provider was through telehealth.
Right.
And, you know, since coming out of the pandemic, while we've seen a lot of the medical care return to the in-office, we are not seeing that same trend in the behavioral health space. In fact, 60% of the telehealth visits that we see across our Anthem membership are mental health visits.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that tells us is that members actually don't just do it out of necessity, but they've actually accepted it and are comfortable seeking mental health treatment through telehealth rather than in person. And so what that allows us to do is expand access, because to your point, what we all have heard over the years is that the access is not there and that people were showing up in emergency rooms. But right. Now that we've been able to expand access through the modality of telehealth and even more in-person mental health care, which we offer, it allows more people to get the needed care that they've been seeking.
And Maria, before we let you go, I know you're working to get more providers into the network, correct? Bringing in new providers in the region?
100%, both for adults, but also importantly for children. I think you and I have heard some very awful stories of kids who have struggled with mental health conditions. And again, if we think about primary care, treating these conditions in children can allow them to grow up and be back, you know, one of the into their normal routines. And one of the providers that we've brought into New Hampshire, which we've talked about before, is InStride Health. InStride
right.
focuses in on kids 7 to 22, and they deal with anxiety, depression, OCD. And so if you think about getting treatment when children are younger for those conditions, they have a lot of great data that shows that through their program, kids who maybe couldn't even go to school because their conditions were so severe, through the programs with InStride, they've been able to reacclimate those children back into school and back into their normal routines. So we're going to continue that hard work, Jack. It's never done. We're always looking for new opportunities to bring great providers into the market and expose our members to them.
Maria, great stuff. Great stuff, as always, CEO of Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield in New Hampshire. If people want to learn more, what's the best way? Or employers learn more, what's the best way?
You can visit us at anthem.com.
All right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Maria. We'll catch you again soon, because this is a message we really have to beat the drum on, and especially treating behavioral health as primary care. I mean, it's sad that we have gone so long, but I appreciate the leadership that you're putting here to kind of lead the way in this, because it's a game changer. Thank you.
Well, and thank you for engaging in the conversation, because I think that means a lot. So thank you very much for having me.
Erin Rial, MBC News Radio national correspondent, joining us for a quick moment. And one of the topics we were talking about earlier, as I said, what Erin was going to come on. And good morning, Erin, by the way. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Basically, I guess the subject is workplace privacy. And we know we just had the state of New Hampshire on, the folks that oversee sort of investment scams, talking about how there is no more privacy, if you will. But when it comes to employers, employees, this is changing a little bit. Take it away.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? You should have absolutely zero expectation of privacy at your place of work. So we do know that basically since the advent of work email, there's been monitoring of said email. And AI tools are now coming online and just kind of expanding the watching, the reading, the tracking of employee conversations because they're more efficient. And the fact of the matter is conversations have never really been private in the workplace. If you are using Slack or Zoom or Microsoft Teams or any work-related software, it's pretty much baked into the cake in terms of the AI capabilities. And major corporations, ours included at IR, but Starbucks, Chevron, Walmart, they all use this. And they say they're looking for everything from bullying and harassment to cyber attacks and insider trading. It is not slowing down in any conceivable way,
no.
And you should have zero expectation of privacy when it comes to your workplace computer.
Yeah, and I think the way things are going, you got to assume everything's out there. All right, thank you, Erin Rial, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you. Brad Carr joining us. Let's start. We'll bring in Rory. Nikki Haley may have some bright spots tonight, but not enough, Brad. And I guess the question is, how soon do you think, realistically, Trump wraps up this nomination?
Yeah, in my opinion, Trump has pretty much wrapped up the nomination. I mean, I don't think that's the real question. The question is what comes down the road that could potentially derail his nomination. And that's still to be seen, right? Because we have so many legal issues that are pending, and those legal issues are where his liability is. So he's going to have to prove that he can, you know, get through most legal challenges. And being on the ballot is obviously the correct move. I think that people didn't like when you have a bunch of partisan people try to kick somebody off of a ballot. And I think the Supreme Court was right, and I'm glad that they acted on that and kind of put that issue to bed. But Donald Trump's liability, again, is his legal issues. And so Nikki Haley, I think, is sticking around for that. I don't think that there's a path for her to get the nomination right now unless something happens horribly to the president in court, which could happen. I mean, but given the Supreme Court's stance, and if they're going to take up the issue of does he have immunity, that's going to delay things. And right now, Donald Trump's game is to delay. And that's a very smart legal strategy, is to delay as long as he can, because the later he can put this off, the more embedded he becomes and the more embedded he is as the Republican nominee.
Brad, we're going to bring in Rory O'Neill just for a quick update. Nothing really that you didn't have, but I want to get in. Rory, NBC News on Super Tuesday. 16 states today, including neighboring Maine and Mass. Take it away, Rory.
Yeah, and Nikki Haley apparently doesn't have anything on her schedule tonight. No victory celebration, no watch party, nothing like that. I think that's a big red flag, and perhaps we might get an announcement from her campaign, perhaps on Wednesday.
What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, look, I think that that's right. I think that you have to look at it at the end of the day and see where do you stand, you know? So as you and I talked earlier, Jack, I said that I didn't want Nikki Haley to hurt her future political chances by even staying into the race through South Carolina, because it was clear she wasn't going to win South Carolina. And as being a very popular governor from that state, to get bumped in that primary obviously is not politically good for her.
And
so I think that that is the way I see it. I think Nikki's going to get out, and Donald, maybe she's going to suspend her campaign, and then she'll wait and see what happens.
And Rory, and really, it's just more of the focus is on Trump and Haley, because that's the only, you know, really the only race that's left, correct?
Right. Although I'm curious about the Senate race out in California. Now, granted, the ballots only have to be postmarked by today, so the results may take a while to get in there. But Adam Schiff versus Steve Garvey, that could be the race we see there in November. It could be remarkable. Not a Democrat-on-Democrat race, as many have suspected.
Yeah, and Jack, that was Adam Schiff actually, you know, quite frankly, spending a lot of money to help Steve Garvey, quite frankly, become the nominee.
Right. Because Steve Garvey has not bought one television ad in California.
Interesting. All right, Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
So, Brad, we can come back to California in a moment, but you mentioned earlier, I know there are legal distractions. I know there's legal stuff going on. People know that. You'd have to be on another planet in the last several whatever to not know that. I guess my question, though, Brad, is what really could derail Donald Trump at this point, especially if he wraps up the nomination in a week or two and Nikki Haley suspends her campaign? What could really – he's not going to take himself out. He's not going to say, okay, I'm decided I'm not going to run for this. It's like Joe Biden. What could really derail him at this point?
Yeah, well, I don't think Joe Biden's going anywhere, and I think he's going to be their nominee, right, wrong, or indifferent. I think he's going forward with it, and unless he has a health crisis, I think that's going to be he's the candidate. With Donald Trump, I think it would have to be public opinion based on what comes out in trial. And if you remember, right after January 6th and the immediate aftermath of January 6th, people were jumping off of the Donald Trump bandwagon, and you saw it from Kevin McCarthy to everybody else. I mean, there was a lot of people moving away from Donald Trump, and he's been able to turn that ship around, and he's going to be the Republican nominee. So I think it would take something that would come out in trial that you hear. And, Jack, there's a lot of people who have flipped. There's a lot of informants, I mean, including Mark Meadows. I mean, by all accounts, it's been widely speculated and presumed that that Mark Meadows is cooperating against Donald Trump. That would be pretty powerful since he was his chief of staff.
Chief of staff. But, again, all these people doesn't seem to have any impact. Brad, I want to take a
few
moments.
But we haven't seen the trials yet, Jack. We haven't seen the trials.
Okay. Let's jump forward to Thursday night a little bit. Put the other hat on, Brad Card, Card and Associates. President Biden, probably one of his biggest moments going into this election year is the State of the Union right now on Thursday night. I imagine it'll be probably around 50 minutes or so if I had to guess. I said earlier how I think that, you know, it's a chance for a president to put the best face forward, the best, you know, paint the best picture on the State of the Union. I imagine the Biden will talk about inflation is coming down, Bidenomics is working, you know, the recession fears are easing. He's not going to, I don't think he's going to talk a lot about the southern border because I think it's an Achilles heel for him, but he'll blame Republicans for not passing that border bill. He'll urge them to do that, and he'll probably take a shot at Donald Trump there. He won't talk that much about that. And he's also between a rock and a hard place when it comes to a ceasefire in Gaza, and not to mention there's still a war going on in Ukraine. What, talk a little bit about State of the Union and what you see coming and what the strategy is if you were in the Biden camp.
Yeah, so the State of the Union is something for the president to sell, right? He's gonna sell his administration, talk about the things that they've accomplished, and he'll take credit for things he had nothing to do with. But it is an opportunity for him to do this with very little rebuttal. Katie Britt, Senator Britt from Alabama, is going to do the Republican response. But let's face it, you and I both know a lot of people don't watch those responses, right? It's the president's State of the Union, and that takes. That's probably 80%.
I'm wondering how many people are going to watch the State of the Union, Brad.
Well, and that's a good question. But, I mean, look, if you go from where things were, the president has things he can talk about. He can talk about oil production, even though he probably won't because he doesn't want to offend his base, his liberal base. But they've actually had a lot of oil production recently. Gas prices have come down significantly from where they were. The inflation rate is subsiding a bit. He has an economic story to tell. And so the question is, how much of it do you believe? But he's going to shed the light most favorably to this. So that's something he'll talk about and probably spend a good amount of time talking about. He'll talk about the bipartisan bills that passed Congress and take some credit for that. And I think he will pass some blame at Republicans for not advancing a legislative bill. And it was based, he's going to blame that on Donald Trump. And I think correctly so blame it on Donald Trump, because I think that package probably would have moved and probably would have passed the Senate if not for Donald Trump coming out and saying that he didn't want that bill and didn't want anything done on the southwest border. So I think that those are things that he'll talk about. His story on the southwest border, as you mentioned, Jack, is horrible. And he'll take a lot of blame. But this is his opportunity to kind of explain why he's not doing more on the southwest border and try to pass blame at Republicans for not taking action. But also there's a lot there with Republicans that he can blame, because it's been a very dysfunctional Congress. I think that under any circumstance and any bar, the Republicans have been dysfunctional as leaders of the United States Congress. And they are a fractured leader. There's a fractured party right now with a very slim majority in the House. So, you know, they have to get these appropriation bills done, and that's becoming a little bit questionable now based on some recent reporting. So we'll have to see if the Republicans can prove that they can govern. And I think that that's what Joe Biden's going to hit them on, to tell them to get their act together and govern.
All right, Brad. Well, we appreciate it. We'll see where it goes. Thank you very much, Brad Card. Garden Associates Lab. Holly Noveletsky joining us. Good morning, New Hampshire, the Pulse of an Edge. Good morning, Holly.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, as you try and make some waves and noise and attention to why you're running, I know you've been on once before. We talked about the business that you oversee. I think it's an ironworks business. You're known over in the Seacoast side of things. What are you finding are issues that people, when you go out and talk to them, say, hey, I'm running for Congress. There's a Democrat incumbent in the 1st District. I'm running because. Tell us why you're running again, and what are voters saying to you, Holly?
So when I first got into the race, I really thought it was the economy that was driving the most of the concern for the voters. But as I go around the 1st District, it's really immigration. People want the border shut. We need to close that border. We need to stop the flow of drugs. We need to stop incentivizing illegal immigration and take care of people here at home that are at need, our elderly, our homeless, our veterans, and not giving those scarce resources to people who come to this country in the first act which break our laws. As such, I took the initiative and went up yesterday to look at our Canadian border, because not just on the southern border, but we have issues with illegal immigration on the northern border and drugs pouring in. Right. We went up to Pittsburgh yesterday.
Now, what when people talk about their concerns on immigration and the border security, who are they blaming? Who are they upset at? Well, how do they think it should be fixed? What do they say to you, Holly? Elaborate a little bit.
So they're angry at the administration, the current administration, Biden. They're angry at the Democratic Party for voting consistently with Biden and allowing all our resources to go to incentivizing illegal immigration. We're having over the border in New Hampshire, with the, even on the southern border, the catch and release. It should be catch and deport. If they're coming in and they're breaking our laws, we need to deport them, not incentivizing them with federal money, state money. In Massachusetts, I was just talking to somebody yesterday in Massachusetts, this morning, and they are overrun with illegal immigration. They said, and you need to be careful. It's going to come spill over into New Hampshire because we're out of resources here.
Yeah.
And housing is expensive. It is in New Hampshire is less than it is in Massachusetts. So it's coming, and it's coming over the northern border. When we were up in Pittsburgh, we talked to some of the local residents, and they're seeing it. They're having seeing drops of drugs on this, on these rural streets that are being picked up by cars from Massachusetts. They have, when they do catch somebody, they get sent over to Vermont for processing and then released, not deported. And some of these homes that are farms and have ranching, and they were used to being able to send their kids out and say, go check the fence line. They're afraid to do that because they don't want to send their kids into possibly right. encounter with illegals. We don't want what happened in Athens, Georgia, Lakin, to yeah. happen here in New Hampshire.
I hear you. Holly Novoletsky, Republican, 1st Congressional District. Are people that are getting upset about border stuff, immigration, do you feel they're genuinely getting upset? You mentioned Boston and some of the issues there. I've talked and highlighted on my show quite a bit, including the last year, the rape of a developmentally disabled woman by an illegal migrant or criminal who had come in here from Haiti. Are they traditional? Is this divided, Holly, like between parties, Republican, Democrats? Are you hearing this from independent-minded people?
I'm hearing it from a wide range of people. I think because the issue of drugs, the issue of issue of drugs, the issue of security, national security. Now that we have the whole war in the Middle East, and when we hear people in from Hamas saying "death to Israel, death to the United States." And we have this open border, I think people feel really at risk for national security. So it's not just a Republican issue. It's become an American issue.
What about economic stuff? You're saying immigration, border security is dwarfing all other issues?
Yes, yes. So I was listening yesterday to the radio, and the concern for a lot of the union workers are concerned that illegal immigrants with work permits are taking jobs at a much lower rate, and this is going to depress wages. And it's not even just a union wage issue, but if you're going to have illegal immigrants who are going to work for less money, it is going to depress the living wage for most of our workers. And it'll be a race to the bottom, and with inflation up, it's not going to be a good situation for anyone.
Now, tomorrow we have Senate President Bradley and another senator. There's some sanctuary city-related pieces of legislation Thursday in the New Hampshire State House you can comment on, but do you believe that the Democrats in New Hampshire, the federal office holders, have spoken out enough on border security? Are they pleased or not with the Biden administration? Do they feel that the Biden administration has made it worse? What are your thoughts on, you know, the incumbents, including Representative Pappas there?
I'm not hearing much about border security with them. I think because it's an election year, you're starting to hear the Democrats starting to talk about border security, but it's only because the winds have turned against them that they're saying it. I think that they have welcomed it, and they're responsible for this open border policy.
All right, if people want to learn more, go ahead, Holly.
Oh, we had a secure border just 3 years ago.
Yep. All right, if people want to learn more, the best way is how?
Holly, H-O-L-L-I-E, for New Hampshire, all spelled out, .com. And I look forward to earning everyone's support.
All right.
And a strong year. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.